Welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Hope everybody had a nice Labor Day. As we head back to work, some of us will be pulling out pictures of the various things we've done this summer and consider this Word Balloon episode an example of that. I've started putting up videos at the Word Balloon website, wordballoon.com, and some of you have sampled them, some of you haven't, and if you haven't, you've missed some great content, and I will be presenting the audio versions of some of these interviews. You might have seen recent video interviews with Howard Chaykin, Dan Slott, and Mark Miller. Well, those will be presented today, but we have new content as well. Jason Aaron will be along to talk about his work coming up on the Max Punisher series. We also talk about Ghost Rider and Scalped and Wolverine Weapon X. George Perez will be along to talk about Legion of Three Worlds, a look back at his career, and finally, the upcoming games. The Titans graphic novel will finally be released, and George talks about that. But to start things off, I couldn't believe I got him, but I did. At the Chicago Comic Con, I got a chance to speak with Edward James Olmos of Battlestar Galactica. And that's where this edition of Word Balloon begins.
Happy to be here at Chicago Comic Con. This is John Suntress, and very happy to be standing next to Commander or Admiral Adama. I was going to, like, bust you down rank. Shame on me. I'm sorry, man.
I started off as a commander, and I ended up an admiral.
There you go. Edward James Olmos, folks, who, you know, from Miami Vice to Blade Runner, and, of course, the wonderful run on Battlestar Galactica that continues now with a two-hour movie coming this fall called The Plan, which Edward is not only acting in, but is directing, and it's the Cylons' perspective of their mission. Is that a fair estimate?
Yeah, that's the way you put it, yeah. Yeah, it's a real privilege to be able to give the fan base something that they'll be very grateful that we did. It probably explains more things than the whole show did.
Okay.
So they'll be real happy to see it.
But
it comes out October 27th on Blu-ray, and if you haven't gotten Blu-ray yet, you should definitely try to do that, especially before this one comes out, because this special effects in this are just riveting.
It's a hallmark of the series, and also certainly the TV film Razor as well, and the wonderful thing, too, is the level of acting you all brought to the series. And don't get me wrong, the writers did beautiful work. I mean, really, David Icke, Ron Moore, all the writers are wonderful writers. But you guys really seemed to did elevate the material, and it was taken to a different level, especially you and Mary and all the scenes you guys had together. It really was, you know, the human element was just never more palpable, I think, when you guys were doing a scene.
Yeah, I think everybody, though. I don't think there was just any performance that was any more greater than anybody else's. What it ended up being was just a testament to the life that was created inside of this program. It's like nothing I've ever experienced. The best ensemble I've worked with.
That's fantastic. I think a lot of fans in San Diego were very excited when you kind of took it upon yourself to say, oh, we want to do more beyond the plan.
Yeah.
And certainly I know all the fans feel the same way. I hope that kind of public outcry will result in, you know, the producers and Sci-Fi Channel and all the money people to continue to do these specials. I think it's a great idea, and I think there are more stories to be told.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. They have already said they've intimated their shock as to what is happening around this. So I think if people are aware, and if the day that it opens on the 27th, if we could sell, you know, 500,000 units of the plan all over the planet, it would be, which isn't a lot when you start to think of the whole fan base. You know?
Okay.
But just in the United States alone, there are tens of millions of fans that have been locked on the show long before it was Battlestar Reimagined. So, like I say, this is a great way. If you want to see more, that's a great way of doing it. Just cast your vote. Spend, you know, $20 to buy the Blu-ray or the DVD and watch the show and enjoy it.
I look forward to it. I have to ask you on one scene, and I heard about it, and I believe it was when you learned that Starbuck, or really came to the grips of the fact that Starbuck had died, and there was a model that was in your quarters.
Yeah.
And I understand it. And a very good acting moment. You really, it was a great thing that was building over the scene of the series. You were building the model very slowly, and then had to smash it to pieces after not accepting that your surrogate daughter had passed and everything. It was a beautiful scene, but I understand it was a very expensive piece.
Yeah, it was, and no one told me.
Yeah.
And no one told me they didn't have any more, you know. So we ended up destroying the only one and most expensive prop probably the show had.
Well, it was a good scene, and at least that will, like, last for posterity.
It will. Thanks to everybody. Everybody enjoyed it, and everybody, so it was well worth the understanding.
it was fun watching this, the episodes you've directed. I'm really looking forward to seeing this movie. And as an actor director in that standpoint, I mean, can you talk just quickly about the perspective of running the characters, running the cast, as well as acting with them?
Yeah, really, it was pretty self-reliant. There was no real kind of directing that we had to do. Everybody knew exactly where they were inside of the situation. Everybody knew where they're coming from, they knew where they were, and they knew where they were going. And it just made it so easy. It's so incredibly prolific in respect to the amount of, you know, what it brought to everybody. It just brought so much human emotion every time somebody would work with someone, and then the next group would come in to do their scene, and the scene before would just like motivate the people who were doing their scene. So it was an ongoing process of giving, and that inevitably the fans are the ones who won.
Well, congratulations. It was an excellent run of the series, and looking forward to The Plan coming in October, directed by and starring Edward James Olmos. We're looking forward to more Battlestar Galactica. Thank you for your time, sir.
Thank you.
John Sutcher's back at Chicago Comic-Con, and I've seen him before at other conventions, but I really think this is my first opportunity to actually interview George Perez. It's a pleasure to see you, sir.
Thank you. Always a pleasure to meet you, paparazzi.
Congratulations on Legion of Three Worlds. I think the book turned out great. It was a beautiful-looking book. Jeff told a great story, as did you. I mean, it was very fun to see that.
I'm very grateful that it was so well-received, and I'm also very grateful to actually talk about it in the past tense.
Was it the designs of some of the new characters? Was that fun? Because you had always said you wanted to do the Legion, and some of these characters have different looks than back in the day.
And trying to find a consensus of their of what they should look like. Like the 5 years later storyline that Keith Giffen did. Obviously, I don't draw like Keith Giffen, so the only thing I could use was the costume. I couldn't draw them stylistically like that because, you know, Cosmic Boy should look like Cosmic Boy through the ages. He shouldn't suddenly have a different face. So that was a challenge of trying to, you know, capture some of those eras where the style defined it as opposed to just costumes. But it was, you know, it was a great challenge. Lord knows, the references were piling up.
And also the nuance of three different versions of the same character and have that line of them being parallel versions of each other and yet being distinct in costume design.
Well, also, and in that case, I was able to do a bit of distinction on the faces as well, because unlike in the movies where the gimmick is that the characters are all played by the same actor and you do special effects, in the comics, you're trying to capture stylistically what made the three different eras different. So my Cosmic Boy from the three different eras would look different from each other. The same thing with Lightning Lass or Light Lass, Lightning Lad or Livewire, whoever the character was. But I did try to make them look like they might be related to each other, but not the same character.
Okay. I understand, talking to you last night, that everyone's excited to hear that finally Games, the Titans' long-awaited original graphic novel. Am I saying it wrong?
No, you're correct. No, okay. I'm just wondering how many people are actually excited, considering I think they're keeping it close to the vest. But I got that's my next project, to finally finish the Titans graphic novel that Marv Wolfman and I had been working on more than a decade and a half ago, because 2010 is the 30th anniversary of the debut of the new Teen Titans that Marv and I co-created. So now DC sees an actual reason to finish that book, as opposed to just being a wallow in nostalgia. That it actually has a marketability, that has been based on a heretofore unpublished original Teen Titans story done by the original creators.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Will it be then a flashback or an untold story?
It'll be an untold story. There'll be no framing sequence to put it into modern perspective. It'll just be a story that's never been told, dealing with the characters at the time. So obviously Jericho would be alive again, or at least previously alive as he was first. Raven would have an original body. Danny Chase was a member there. And of course they're all wearing costumes that were around the 1980s vintage.
Yeah. And, you know, you and Marv really, and I'm not being nice saying this, really picked DC up and put DC back on the map in a very distinct way with the Teen Titans.
Well, I think it's been acknowledged that the Teen Titans pretty much saved DC Comics. And if nothing else, has given me a permanent cachet there. I guess that's why I'm always going to be working. I still love doing what I do, and I try to refine my work with every new book I do. But, you know, the fact that DC is where I've had my greatest hit. I mean, I've had successful runs at Marvel, but when it comes to things that have had a certain permanence to it and an actual impact on a company worldwide, I mean, we had the Teen Titans. My Wonder Woman is the current Wonder Woman out there. The history of the East Universe.
Absolutely.
Crisis on Infinite Earth. There was no such term as pre- and post-crisis until that series came along. And that all these major events that have been brought up in the last decade has obviously spun off the original Titans on Infinite Earth. Excuse me, Crisis on Infinite Earth. So, like, yes. And DC treats it very nicely. And I've had a great run at Marvel, too.
Sure.
But right now, it looks like I'm a DC boy for foreseeable future.
It seemed like in Final Crisis there was one scene, Final Crisis, which I know you didn't draw, but there seemed to be one scene that evoked a moment in history of the DC universe where we see that hand kind of create the universe or the world.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like Grant kind of brought that scene back in Final Crisis of Superman kind of putting his hand out there and you know, at the beginning of time. And I almost wonder if there was, if he had told you that that was kind of a nod to what you guys did.
Oh, no, they, I mean, I'm well aware of how many nods I get. I've been in this, in the industry long enough and I've done major work for the comics that now I become a touchstone that they can refer to. The same way I would refer to certain works by certain artists that I grew up with, after 35 years, I've become that artist that other people are now looking back to, particularly since so many of these series were monumental in scope and had lasting impact.
35 years, and going back to even The White Tiger, which is how I discovered you back in the black and white Masters of Kung Fu days.
Yes, I finally got to sign a couple of Masters of Kung Fu, including my very first one at this convention. Those are hard to find.
Excellent. Well, I've got one. I should have brought it up. But it's a pleasure to see you and continued success. It's really great to see you back and active and really looking forward to games, much like JLA Avengers, which we saw those pages that you never got to do in so many fan magazines for years. To a degree, we saw a few images of games. Looking forward to seeing this new graphic novel.
I'm looking forward to closing yet another door. You know, I'm getting a feeling of closure now. Okay, that's one of the last of the non-completed projects that I can finally get back to.
What are the new, are you able to talk about?
No, I can't. They have offered me work, but I told them that I can only really do one project at a time. So that next project, I won't even get started until January of next year.
Fair enough. Well,
okay.
When the time comes and the announcements made, we'll probably book you again.
One thing I am doing, I'm doing covers, a couple of covers for Wildstorm, which is the first time I've ever done any work for Wildstorm. There's a crossover, I believe, with The Authority and Wildcats, and I'm doing covers for that.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, so new characters. I love it.
Fantastic, and more new characters for George Perez to get his fingers on.
Yeah.
So I'll be excited about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
John Sutcher's back at the Wizard booth at Chicago Comic Con, and happy to spend a moment with the most scariest man in comic books. It's Jason Aaron.
Hi. That's great. That's a perfect intro. I love that I make you so uncomfortable.
In a good way, man. And actually, something happened.
How can you be uncomfortable in a good way? How do I fright you in a good way?
Because your writing is compelling, and it frightens me, and then you see you, and it gets even scarier in a good way. But wait, because honestly, before we started rolling tape, somebody, I think, paid you the kind of compliment you want to hear. They've been reading your Wolverine and have been so blown away that now they're going to start reading Scalp, which I think that's kind of the plan, right?
Oh, yeah, that's totally the plan. I mean, I don't do the work-for-hire stuff just for that reason, but obviously I want to use that to move more people towards Scalp. I'm sitting at Artist Alley here, and people come up with a big stack of Wolverine, and I'm going to say, hey, if you like this, check out Scalp. I think you'll like it, too.
I wasn't sure if there was room for another Wolverine book, but I have to say Weapon X is a delight, and also the quick stuff you did with Dan Way as well in the Wolverine book was fun to read, and I'm glad to hear that Weapon X is doing well, and more stories are to come.
Yeah, I mean, for me as a reader, this is the kind of Wolverine book I wanted to read. I mean, I like the continuity stuff. I like the Wolverine's history, but I think it's refreshing to do a book where it's standalone. You don't have to have been reading Wolverine or the X-Men for the last 30 years to understand the book. And I'm also trying to do some different kinds of stories, like the second arc that starts with issue 6 is a psychological horror story. It's the kind of story we haven't seen Wolverine in before.
So the most scariest man in comics is doing a psychological horror story,
right.
And then he asked me why I'm afraid of him. Well, there you go.
I'm going to work you into the story, too, and do something just utterly horrible.
Excellent. Hey, I want to be a freaky guy like the ones you've been given Tony Moore to draw in Ghost Rider. That's been a lot of fun, man. And again, it's easy to look at Scalped and Wolverine and see you as an action guy, war guy, all the different genres. But I think in Ghost Rider, too, along with the horror, you've had a lot of humor, and that's been a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, with Ghost Rider, I think you got to embrace how outrageous the whole thing is and run with it. And Tony, you know, was perfect for that. Like, I, as soon as I got the Ghostwriter gig, I knew I wanted Tony on board at some point. It was a matter of when could we work it out. So I wish he could have done more. Not to take away from Roland and Tan and the other guys I worked with who were great. But Tony was born to draw Ghost Rider. He'd been waiting to draw that character since he was a kid. And so it was one of the most fun things I've ever done in comics, was being able to just feed him that kind of stuff. I knew he was just going to knock out of the park. I mean, a trucker horror story, like Tony Moore is the guy who's born to draw that.
Absolutely.
And I'm super proud that I'm the guy who got to write it for him.
Great, but World War One Ghost Rider, and along with Smokey and the Bandit Ghost Rider, pretty cool.
Chuck Norris Ghost Rider.
Chuck Norris Ghost Rider. And now November, The Punisher. Tell me about, is it November, correct?
Yes.
All right,
yes.
Talk about your run on The Punisher, or how much you can tell us before without spoiling.
Well, Steve Dillon.
Wow.
Kingpin.
Excellent.
And eventually Bullseye in the Max universe.
Wow. That's interesting to hear that Bullseye and the Kingpin will be, you know, toys to play with in the Max universe, because I know there's always the concern of it being an adult audience and which Marvel Universe toys they're willing to put in the Max world, so that's great.
Yeah, well, they offered me Kingpin, and I said, well, if I'm going to take Kingpin, I have to have Bullseye. And I think it was an easy way to follow in Garth's footsteps. I mean, it's incredibly daunting to take over that book after Garth. And all the villains that he created, the amazing characters he created that he drew Punisher up against. Like, well, what do I do? How am I going to create a villain that's bigger than Barracuda? Well, an easy way is to bring in Bullseye and change him so that he works as a Max character. So the first arc, we meet Wilton Fisk as he's becoming the Kingpin.
Oh, wow, okay.
And the second arc, Bullseye comes in. So we end up with, you know, Frank really facing the biggest enemies we've seen him face in the Max series. And we knock him down a peg so he's lower than we've ever seen him. And from that depth has to climb, you know, against this insurmountable enemy. And along the way, we also... along the way, we go back to Punisher's origins. We see something about Frank Castle we haven't seen before that really throws you for a loop.
Oh, very cool. That's great.
And there's lots of gunfire.
Oh,
and,
that's good.
eyeballs popping out.
Yay.
Weird, strange things for Steve Dillon to draw.
That's cool. You know, the Max line is a very special line, and I think the right creators have to take the right amount of care of appreciating the exploitive violence, but also having, you know, good drama and a good story to back it up. And certainly Steve Dillon is a good guy from the art department. Jason, a creator that came in to Marvel with his own voice and has been able to maintain it and improve the Marvel Universe in his voice. Those are the kinds of things that I've seen with creators that have come to Marvel. Jason's a perfect example of that. So thank you for your time.
And I'm really scary, too.
Incredibly
right?
scary. It comes across on the page and now in this video. So thank you for frightening me, and thank you for tolerating me.
Thank you. Thanks for being afraid.
Very happy to spend a moment right now in the green room with Mark Miller, who has been doing wonderful work now, not only in comics, but it's so nice to see some of this stuff popping up on screen. We enjoyed Wanted last summer, and we know Wanted 2 is in the works. But first, let's talk about Kick-Ass, which, you know, I understand you brought a clip last night. I'm sorry, I didn't see it.
Oh, man, you missed yourself. It was good stuff. Matthew Vaughn has done the most beautiful job on this thing. Couldn't be happier with it. And we had 15 minutes of it previewed at the convention. We did it at San Diego as well. But we showed an extra 90 seconds here in Chicago just to get people, you know, that little extra for coming here too. It'll no doubt be pirated and on YouTube, so you can see it there, you know. But it looked great, and it went down really well, which is brilliant, because Matthew and his pals put $50 million of their own money into this film, so if it was rubbish, we'd have been worried, but luckily it's done that good.
Well, and obviously having, Nicolas Cage obviously helps in the cast, and, yeah. I know you guys are looking for backing, or as far as a studio or distribution, I suppose, would be the best way to
put
it, right?
Well, everybody wants it, which is great.
Great.
Because, to give you a bit of history on it, what happened was, a year ago, more than a year ago now, put a screenplay together. You know, I blocked out the plot, Matthew wrote the scripts, and then Jane Goldman came in and redrafted it, and we loved it. We thought, here's the Pulp Fiction of superhero comics, you know, and we thought this was going to be great, and then we showed it to all the studios, and they were like, this is terrible. It's got a 10-year-old girl swearing and killing people dressed as a superhero, you know. All the things that we liked about it, they hated about it, and they said, we don't want to make this. And Matthew, luckily, is a rich guy, and raised the $50 million himself and made the film, and it's worked out beautiful. It's great. So now they've seen it and they kind of understand it. Now they've seen the movie itself. All the studio heads have seen it in the last week out in LA, and now everybody's getting in a nice little bit of frenzy. Hopefully, you know, there's three studios put serious bids in already, but we're going to try and talk this through, because Matthew's feeling was that you guys should have coughed up the cash last year, not now. If he's to invest the money, he wants a good return on it, you know?
Absolutely, man.
So it's looking good. I mean, luckily the thing's great, and it's going to come out at a time when there's been a lot of quite disappointing genre movies.
Certainly.
This summer, I mean, see, last summer, think about it, you wanted to start my
Iron Man,
Hulk. I love
Hulk,
you
was
know,
wonderful.
You'd help out too, you know, a load of good genre movies all at once. And this year there's just been Star Trek, really. You know, I mean, the other stuff, Wolverine and all that's all kind of rubbish, really. You know? And, like, yeah, there's a lot of disappointing stuff this year. And I think it was because of the writer's strike 2 years back. All
true.
The scripts, I think, were just lying around you.
Certainly.
So I think to come out at the end of that, when we come out maybe February or so before the good stuff starts again next year, I think we're going to hopefully really capitalise on a bunch of disappointed fanboys from this year. You know? So,
absolutely. No, and I think that's a good time to release something that doesn't have a recognisable mainstream thing. Yes, exactly.
It's done very well. If you add up all their printings, you know, each issue's done about 110,000 copies or something crazy. But that's nothing really in the real world.
No,
not a lot. It sounds good in comic terms.
In comic terms, it's wonderful, absolutely.
But really, that's not a lot of guaranteed tickets,
no.
You know? So if we can get that 300 slot and get out there February, March at the latest, that's perfect. Because I don't want to go up against Iron Man 2 guys.
Absolutely, man. No, that's great. Hey, back to comics. Fantastic Four just wrapped up.
Yeah.
You know, love the whole run, man. And truly, I mean, they were good personal stories. I love the Christmas story in Scotland. Was wonderful. And just, yeah, I mean, it was the little moments as well as the big exciting moments of Doom's mentor and things like that. But really, really the quiet character moments, which is always the highlight of the Fantastic Four.
I think so. I think sometimes people forget that. You know, the Stan and Jack stuff, you were as curious about who their new babysitter was going to be, you know, or Sue's new hairdo, and would you rejoice? You know, that kind of stuff took up as much space as Galactus and all that kind of stuff. So, you know, I always thought, is that balance with Fantastic Four? It should be somewhere between Bewitched and a $250 million movie. It crosses both things. That's what makes it unique. Yeah.
Outstanding. Are we distracted?
Oh, no,
that's okay. We were cool. No worries. Everyone's excited for the wrap-up of Old Man Logan. What a great story that's been. And, again, you know, alternate futures and possible futures are always fun things to play with. And
you know the funny thing? All my favorite comics really are those ultimate.
Yeah, Kingdom Come, stuff like that.
Kingdom Come, I think, is the best. Probably the best comic I've ever read. I loved it, you know. And it's never fashionable to say that about a book that's quite recent like that, just the last 10 years. Because most people say, oh, sick and stuff and all that.
Sure.
I just think it was a masterpiece. And every issue, I couldn't wait for the next one. I remember Mark Waid actually giving us some proofs of issue 3 when I was at the San Diego Con in 97. And I couldn't wait. I actually went upstairs so no one could distract me and sat and read them in the room, you know. And I loved it. It was brilliant. But, like, I love Dark Knight, you know, and Watchmen as an alternate reality, as the alternate universe characters, you know. So those kind of alternate universe kind of future things are always the best stuff, you know. I think it's because you're removed from continuity and
anything can happen.
Self-contained. Yeah, yes. Anybody could die on page 2, you know, and you don't know what's going to happen. You know?
And certainly something you covered yourself with the Fantastic Force, and that was fun to see as well in your run. And and interesting, too, that they're already building on it and then tossing it to some other guys to kind of build on. But, yeah, the death of the Invisible Girl, you know, what an interesting twist to that story, too. And also, I love the way that, you know, there really is this inner Miller universe to the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, yeah.
And tying 1985 to... The FF story and everything, and bring Clyde back to it from 85. What an interesting turn there.
I kind of like the idea of just doing my own little one-man event, like one-man crossover. I've just done Civil War, and as much as I'm obviously so happy it was as big as it was, I mean, it's huge. It's a lot of work, and I hate collaborating with other writers, and I don't mean any disrespect to them, you know, because if it's Alan Moore, I'd hate doing it. You know, just the idea of having to read other people's stories and work my stories in around it. I think it's hard enough sometimes writing a story without doing a jigsaw at the same time. So I thought, if I'm going to do an event again, I'd like to just make it all me, you know, so that I can make all the pieces fit together without having to negotiate with people and everything, you know. And civil work, for the most part, works out really good like that. But it's a lot of work and a lot of phone calls and a lot of rerouts.
Sure, you know, coordinating with others.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and sometimes it worked out good and sometimes it didn't, the crossover things. Whereas I kind of like the idea that Fantastic Four, Old Man Logan, and 1985, and even Kick-Ass, they all do tie in quite neatly. You know, Kick-Ass
cool.
gets his own little bits in there too. And it's all down to me, so if it's any good or not, that's entirely my fault or whatever, you know.
Everything's working out good, don't worry. So you're returning to the Ultimate Universe with the Ultimate Avengers.
Yeah.
And what can you tell us, you know, without spoiling, in terms of what to look forward to?
The opening page of it is Nick Fury, like, what the hell, you know, looking at. And he's looking at the destroyed Triskelion, but this is my own little comment on being away from the Ultimate Universe, like he has been for a couple of years.
Yes.
And just saying, you know, I go away for 10 minutes and the whole place goes to shit, you know. And, like, that's my little comment on, don't worry, we're back, we're fixing all this. So, like, you know, there's good teams, you know, there's, like, Jeff Loeb's going to be doing some stuff, Warren Ellis doing another book, Brian Bendis, and me. Plus really A-list artists like Lanil Francis Yu, you know, Carlos Pacheco, all top class artists that are involved. And really that's what the Ultimate line was all about in the past, you know. Like,
absolutely.
Really they didn't care about Bendis and I at the beginning because nobody had heard of him.
No, it should happen. But
really,
you.
I mean, back in 2000,
yeah.
you know, he was just a bald kid from
Cleveland. From Cleveland.
You know? And that was the guy nobody could understand the act. You know? But like, with Adam Cooper and Bagley and all those guys.
True.
It was Brian Hitch. And I just think what made it work was a finite number of books, making it really small with the best talent you can possibly get. And I think that's going to happen again. I think this year is a good year ahead. Maybe rubbish again in a couple of years, but right now I think it'll be a good year.
The palette is cleared for new stuff from you, and we're looking forward to
I'm booked in for 2 years. I'm definitely doing 2 years on Ultimate Adventures.
Excellent. That's great, man.
With four different big artists. Like the first one will be Carlos Pacheco. The next one will be Lanil Francis Yu. And then there's two other big guys doing year two. You know, so it's all good stuff.
Very cool. And also new Miller World stuff, which is great, man. I mean, everyone loved the first run, and we were just talking before we started rolling, too, about American Jesus. I love the rebranding on American Jesus. And
Well, we realized it's pretty lucky, really. You know, I mean, the only creator-run stuff I've done really is once it's Kick-Ass, American Jesus, and Funny.
Yeah, Funny. Yeah, and Warriors.
Four of those are in production as films, you know, which is nuts. You know, I mean, the hit rate of that is crazy, you know. So, you know, from a business point of view, even as well as a creative point of view, you just sort of think, well, I should probably do more of these and maybe do some more movies. But also, fun, it's actually a really good fun. Like, Kick-Ass is the most I've ever enjoyed working, you know.
Wonderful.
And, you know, I mean, I've loved doing American Jesus, you know, and there's just nothing like creating your own thing. And again, I think it's that autonomy, like, you don't have to cross over with anyone. And I generally don't anyway, but even so, I'm still beholden to maybe 40 years of continuity.
Certainly.
You know? But when you're creating your own thing from scratch, it's also great for new readers too. Like my friends who don't read comics never read my things like Old Man Logan or anything, but they do like Kick-Ass because you don't have to have read any comics.
Absolutely.
You know? So I love the idea of that. So I'm going to do three new things. I'm going to do a thing with Steve McNiven.
Cool.
I'm going to do Dave Gibbons and I are talking about doing a project.
Wonderful. You know, oh, that'll be very cool.
Lanil Francis Yu and I are talking about
things.
So it's all really good high-end guys, you know, so I want to make sure the next wave of books are as good as the first wave, you know.
Excellent. Man, that's cool. 2000 AD boys getting back together.
Yeah,
I like that.
Nice. And Gibbons is my hero. I mean,
me too,
I wrote Gibbons a letter when I was 16, and he was just doing Watchmen at the time.
Sure.
And, you know, he's the biggest artist in the industry, and I don't know how cocky I must have seemed. I wrote my letter and said, I'm thinking of becoming a comics writer when I was in high school, and I think you're probably the best artist in the industry, so you should draw me. And he must have thought, what a prick, you know. But what he did was he sort of sent this really nice letter back with a really nice sketch and all that. He said, maybe we'll work together someday. And, you know, here we are 20 years on, and, you know, hopefully we are.
Outstanding, man. Yeah. Now, you mentioned War Heroes. So are we going to see more?
Hmm. Absolutely, yeah. I mean, issue 3 was done like a year ago or something. But to be fair, you know, we're doing it for free, and Tony had to take paying work on top of free work, you know. I mean,
understandable,
guys get bills to pay.
Sure.
It's easy for a writer because we can work faster, you know, but like artists, I mean, most guys can only do a certain number of pages a week, you know. So Tony's actually finished it now, and now I'm the one holding it up, you know. So issue 3 should be out hopefully in a couple of weeks, maybe about a month at most. that I have to write issue for, Mark. You know, so, but I know how it's going. So, issue 3 is good fun. It's the one where Islamic fundamentalists flying and attacking F-111 bombers and all that kind of stuff. So I hope I'm still in one piece after this one comes out.
Very cool. Well, you know, honestly, it's cool to see you address the war genre and then get into that. And it's certainly contemporary war, which is much different than your classic Sergeant Fury, Lee Hollers, or Sergeant Rock stuff.
In a way, this is the 21st century Captain America, because it's about people popping pills to get powers to go and fight in the Middle East, you know? And that's the take Sony are doing with the movie as well, you know? So the War Heroes movie, the script, screenplay is just getting written just now, you know? So,
very cool.
So I think that'll be at least 2011 before that, so, you know.
And 1 and 2, where are we in the production?
1 and 2 is all written, the script's all... I think everybody's quite happy with the latest draft. It's been through a few drafts. And it should start production. Pre-production begins in October, I think. So it should start production shortly after that. And last I heard, it was going to be out at the end of next year, you know. So fingers crossed, all goes well. I mean, the first one made $350 million, cost $75 to make. So sequels are inevitable, you know.
And I must tell you, just from a personal note, I work in that neighborhood every day. That's where my radio station is.
Well,
so
Chicago?
For Wanted, yeah. Oh, absolutely,
oh,
man. So yeah, I mean, literally.
Were you
there
when they were filming then?
I was, and for the I was there for Angelina's scenes, which is pretty amazing.
Right.
Yeah, that and Batman, of course, was filming at the same or right after.
We had the Morgan Freeman just going between the two sets.
So yeah, it was really even more of a postcard kind of thing for me to kind of see where I work. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, from the first kill to a lot of the driving scenes, I was just like, oh my god, I walk these streets all the time. And, hey, you know, honestly, it's always a pleasure to talk to you, and I thank you for this time. And hopefully, you know, we can do another phone one, you know, in a few months or something.
Anytime.
That'd be great.
I could just come. Yeah.
There you go. Hey man, you know, I live 10 minutes away. You can come bunk with me until your to your thing, man. So to your plane. Thanks for your time today, and have a good con. And I know everyone's really happy to see you in Chicago.
Thanks very much. Thank you.
While I'm interviewing Dan Slott, who will be videotaping me for his website, Word Balloon 2.
What you don't realize is that all I see is John Sanchez doing this.
Exactly. Well, you know something?
Can we at least paint a picture?
Do you want me to superimpose a picture? And like I'll do picture-in-picture, and I'll have a cube of me. Next.
No. I just want to draw a happy face on the back of your camera so I'm talking to somebody.
Dan, it is good to see you. Dan Slott, writer of Mighty Avengers, writer of Amazing Spider-Man, and congratulations on issue 600.
Thank you very much. It was a big team effort, and I was really... It's been out for a couple of weeks, and I was carrying around a copy with me. It was one always close at hand as a kind of security blanket and proof that it did exist, that Spider-Man 600 came out, and I did write a lead story in it with John Romita Jr. and Klaus Janson and Dean White, and... it was very, very trippy. And then I'd be telling people, like, I'm in a comic book with Stan Lee.
Fantastic Four scenes were fantastic. Johnny's scenes in particular, which is certainly in your wheelhouse, so it's good to visit that relationship again, I'm sure.
I love those two guys together. They write themselves. It makes my life easier. I think he should come over to Spider-Man. I think, you know, the way they used to do, like, Captain America and the Falcon.
Why not?
Daredevil and the Black Widow. Amazing Spider-Man, Human Torch.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
Please.
That would be awesome.
I think that would be very cool, man. So, and of course, you know, and we're well enough in advance now that issues have come out, so... great capper to the wedding. Who catches the bouquet? It's Mary Jane.
We had a... When we had one of our summits, when we had one of our Spider summits to talk about it, people were perplexed, like, how do we promote the next arc? You know, it's going to be Mary Jane, Mary Jane, Mary Jane, but that we don't want to ruin the ending of your story. And I was the guy who actually said, ruin it. We got Mary Jane coming back, sticker on every damn cover. Let's call it, hey, everybody, Mary Jane's here, the story arc.
And I love the Daredevil moment as well, and Spider-Man stating the obvious of, man, you know, you're just a downer, man.
Oh, man, can you imagine being in a room with Matt Murdock? It's great to read about him, but, you know, ever since the Miller years, it's always been like, I am Matt Murdock. You know, just...
Yeah, you know.
What a depressing SOB. But that's why we love him.
Who played? You know? Who did Frank Black in Millennium? He should play older Daredevil. I can't remember his name.
Lance Henriksen.
Yeah, Lance Henriksen, exactly. All the charred bodies.
Yeah, the one person who should not be Daredevil is...
Ben Red Affleck. Buttons?
Ben Affleck.
Oh, I was going to say, Red Buttons would make a lousy dad, though. How are you?
It's
Ben Affleck, absolutely.
No, but it's like, no, you want someone with, you know, tortured soul.
Absolutely.
Not, you know.
Well, Goodwill Hunting's.
Goodwill Hunting's best friend. Yeah.
Hey, and also that moment of the Fantastic Four ready to solve the problem, and
we don't know. it was just such a fun book to work on, and John Romita Jr. knocked it out of the park. That was, every time the art would come in for this, I'd be like, this was a marathon more than any other thing we worked on, because we had to work on this so far in advance. You got close to 3 issues of a comic for the lead feature, and you got all these amazing backups from the other Spider writers, and you got the extra features from some of Marvel's top talents, and Steve Wacker put together this amazing package. Steve Wacker, all credit goes to Steve Wacker and Tom Brennan, who put in more work on this book than anybody, and countless hours, and it was scary. And Joe Caramagna, the letterer, who lettered the whole thing.
Wow, really? The entire book?
The entire book.
Holy cow.
104 pages.
Way to go, Joe.
Yeah, Joe would be like up in bed, you know, with his laptop, in bed, wife sleeping next to him, just still, you know, doing the lettering. He was the biggest trooper on this book.
That's excellent, man. No, it was very satisfying, and it's so nice to see a big, fat, single, you know, mini graphic novel, forgive me, but, you know, graphic novella,
no,
if you will.
No ads.
Yeah?
No ads. One of my personal kind of mission statements for this issue, which I didn't tell anybody. It wasn't like something I said to Steve or anybody, like, I want this issue to be this. It was just a personal mission statement. When I was a kid, there were books I followed that religiously, like Marvel Team Up and 2-in-1 and Thing and Amazing. And then there were other books I didn't, like Iron Man or Thor. But if one of those issues hit a 100 or a 200, I would, you know, I'm plunking out the money.
I'm with you.
I gotta have Iron Man 100 where he's breaking the girder. I gotta have, you know, I haven't been following the story. I don't know what it is, but it's 100. It's gotta be special. And I kind of knew that we were gonna get a lot of readers, first time readers, young readers, parents buying this for their kids the first time.
Good point.
I wanted this to be a good jumping on point for any Spider-Man fan of any generation. For years, I worked on Batman Adventures and the Adventure line over at DC, and we were writing really solid stories that had this very Bruce Timm-style artwork. And it's tough to write a story that is all ages, because you don't want to write a dumbed-down story. You don't want to write a story that, oh, this is a kiddie story.
Absolutely.
But you want to write a story that anyone can read. That's hard. It's really hard. I think Paul Tobin does a great job over on the Marvel books doing that, too, now. And I wanted this book to be that. I wanted Spidey 600. I wanted anyone to be able to pick this up. There wasn't going to be anything truly vulgar or, you know, horrible that you wouldn't want a child reading, but at the same time, something captivating that would hold an adult's interest. Just to be this perfect, nice, everybody can read this, it's going to be around forever, 600.
And self-contained story, but also leading to, you know, what's to follow, obviously. And
yeah, there's that hook ending of Mary Jane, but it's still a self-contained unit of entertainment.
Yes,
it's like if you see the movie Interspace with Dennis Quaid, where, you know, Martin Short jumps in that car and he's driving off at high speed to another adventure. You don't need to ever see that adventure. Or the end of the Mortal Kombat movie where everybody braces and the oncoming storm is coming. And, you don't need to know.
That's
you
very funny.
You don't need to know Butch and Cassidy get out. You just don't. That's the ending of the story.
Excellent.
But at the same time, hopefully you're going to come back and check out the Red-Headed Stranger issues. We've got the Mark Waid one was really fun. And now we've got the Fred Van Lente arc coming up with the Chameleon, which is awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah. And people who saw the hook that we just did a preview online, and it's creepy.
Can you say anything about your next arc on the book, or is it too tied to what's coming up as well?
No. The next thing you're going to see from me in the Spider era, in the Spider unit, is in November. I'm doing Spider-Man The List with Adam Kubert. And we're finally going to get to see Spidey and Iron Patriot Norman Osborn throw down.
Excellent.
It's the Norman Osborn's list has 8 things, and he saved the best for last.
Fantastic. Yep. American Son, Joe Kelly did a great job, knocked it out of the park.
Every issue of American Son was just like jaw-dropping good. It's tough. You have these characters like Spider-Man, and I hope I'm not spoiling anything for you, but especially if you subscribe to the book, I think you're pretty sure that Spider-Man's going to be there next month and the month after that. It's not going to be, oh no, Spider-Man's in a death trap. Will he survive? Roll eyes. No, he's Spider-Man. We're, you know.
Well, it's the journey. It's how he gets out, obviously. That's the excitement, and that's really the mystery, and that's what makes it fun.
Right, but you read that issue of American Sun when Norman Osborn puts a gun to Spider-Man's head and fires it, and you go, holy, I got to read this next.
Good call, yeah.
What the? How did he? What the? That's great. To be able to do that to a Spider-Man reader, a jaded Spider-Man reader, a longtime Spider-Man reader, to get everyone out there across the board excited to come back, and I hope Spider-Man's okay. That's Joe Kelly. That's such talent to do that.
Let's switch gears and start talking about Mighty Avengers, because... Mm-hmm. Again, you know, and I mentioned this in our audio conversation about the Avengers. What I like in particular of how you're handling Hank Pym, because in a lot of ways it really is the Hank Pym show. And but in a good way. I mean, like, the strengths of Hank Pym and also the flaws of Hank Pym, and certainly kissing Yocasta at the end.
I think you can't look away from Hank's flaws, because the great thing about Marvel characters is they have feet of clay. And the other great thing about Marvel is we have this long, rich history. We had during the Secret Invasion Summit, we were all going around and talking about who was going to be a Skrull. And I offered up Hank. And the minute I offered up Hank, one or two writers leapt at the chance to undo the slap. They went, oh, we undo the slap, Hank will be back to normal. Hank will be great. And I was the guy fighting like a banshee, just going like, no, the slap stays. He made a horrible, horrible mistake. You can't whitewash his past. You can't undo that horrible thing he did. I think that sends a worse message, is that you got to live with this now for the rest of your life, that you did this. That's part of his character. My take is, if you took that out, what would you be left with Hank Pym?
He becomes a faceless member in the way that a lot of Avengers and second-tier Justice League members, you could interchange them.
Justice League, you nailed it on the head. If you read Justice League stories from the Silver Age, and if you imagine them all in a bus, and that bus goes in a tunnel, and everything's black, and you have word balloons, you don't know who the hell is speaking.
You're right.
Because they're all these generic white guys with perfect teeth, standing arms akimbo, with perfect, you know, the same physique. You know, if you turn the lights out, you know, you didn't know that one had blonde hair and was wearing orange and green, you wouldn't know he was Aquaman. You just wouldn't, unless he suddenly said something like, by the seven seas, or great Krypton. That's why they had to keep saying that, because he couldn't tell them the hell apart.
Even Wonder Woman, great Hera. Thank God she spoke.
And that's what Hank Pym would have been. He would have been this white bread, perfect teeth, boring ass. Sorry.
No, you can swear it's word balloon, buddy.
Ah, cool. So I was, you know, you let him have his flaws. Let him be the guy who created Ultron. Let him be the guy who had that horrible breakdown and hit his wife one time, but one time too many.
Absolutely.
Because one time is always one time too many.
Further tragedy that he was a Skrull, and, you know, the things that he missed and the way that, you know, the time has passed without him. So even more baggage for Hank.
That he's Rip Van Winkle suddenly, and oh my God, all this happened. And oh my God, for a while, that Skrull that was me was the most beloved man on the planet, and everyone thought he was aces. A Skrull did a better me than me. Well, that's a horrible thing to find out. And that the person you did this great wrong, they're gone. Janet's gone. This great love of your life, this tortured love, is gone. Steve, one of your best pals, is gone. Everybody's, Bill Foster, gone. And all of this happened because Tony Stark was running the show. You know, Tony, the guy that... that's why, like, I think that first issue of Mighty is important that we did, issue 21, because that's Hank... You find out that before he knew Tony Stark was Iron Man, he thought that's what he could contribute to the team. He was the big brain, the smartest man in the room. And then that one day he finds out, before anybody else, takes off the helmet, and, oh, crap, that's Tony Stark. Oh, God, I'm Bill Gates, but he's Steve Jobs. And, oh, I feel like crap. Oh, no.
But also, again, using it to his strength, and that's something I've enjoyed, because you've seen Reed Richards and Tony and some of the other brains of the Marvel Universe go, you know, Hank, you're cute, but really, at the end of the day, I'm going to beat you in the brain tug of war here, but don't count Hank out, and that's the beautiful thing.
Don't count Hank out. One of the nice things we've been doing with Hank is that Hank has acquired a think tank in Amadeus Cho.
Absolutely.
He's got a backup hard drive now. He's got this guy helping him out. I think the two of them make a really nice team. It's something you don't get to see in the Hercules-Cho dynamic. Suddenly you get the two brains hanging out. And how does that make Herc feel? It's a fun thing to do. I like that Amadeus isn't Rick Jones. There's fun things you can get out of that. You're going to see in Mighty Avengers 30, you're going to see a sequence that spells out once and for all where Hank falls on the genius scale, where he falls in the Marvel Universe. What is his, not just, everyone always goes first, second, third, fourth, fifth. No, people have roles. People have specialties. People have things. Hank isn't just the grow it and shrink it guy. You know, there's much more to Hank than that. And when you look at how does Reed Richards use his intelligence, how does Tony Stark use his intelligence, how does Victor Von Doom use his intelligence, there's a different thing that people do that make them a different role in that part of the Marvel Universe.
And further, I enjoy this balance of new characters and old established characters, and I think you've got the corner on that on Marvel's end. Jeff Johns had it at JSA, and now it's Willingham and Sturgis' job, and it's fun to see you kind of put that mix in and see these guys rub together.
Tom Brewer would keep saying this. I think you've got a Justice Society team. I can't give myself the luxury of looking at it that way.
Sure.
When I sit down to write Mighty, I've got to go, this is Mighty Avengers. They are the Earth's mightiest heroes, and this is what they believe, and this is how they think. I owe it to the audience to believe that myself and to sell it.
Well, and I can appreciate that, and I would also say that it is a traditional Avengers team and traditional Avengers stories. But again, you're coming at it from left field in a good way. So, in a way that I think maybe after 500 issues, maybe people were kind of getting creaky with the Avengers, and that's why New Avengers was such a refreshing change of pace. The same can be said now for Mighty.
New Avengers blew the doors off of everything. New Avengers, there's a reason why this is the flagship book of the Marvel Universe. When you see this book with Wolverine and Spider-Man together, with Bucky Cap and Spider-Woman and Luke Cage, it is new. It is fresh. It is big. And to Bendis' credit, this is the book that has set the tone for the Marvel Universe. The way I look at Mighty is this is about hardcore Avengers. I look at something like New Avengers and go, that's the Marvel Universe. That's Brian setting the course and setting the pace for all of Marvel. For me, this is getting back to the guys who have their portraits hanging in Avengers Mansion. And some people interpret that as this is the book for old farts. This is the book for, I remember Avengers back when it was like this. Yeah. Fine. I'm with you. I'm king of the old farts and happy. But I look at it, this is Avengers through and through. This is about the legacy. This is about the team that holds their head high and knows that there has come a day, unlike any other, when one hero alone can't do it, and there you go.
Very cool. Am I missing anything? Is there anything else we should hit?
Coming up in end of the year, beginning of next year, Marcos Martin and I get back together for Amazing Spider-Man. We are going to do an arc that is going to star Mysterio.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
Yay.
We were having a lovely talk where I'm like, should we redesign the costume? I'm like, maybe we could redesign the costume. We got to keep the fishbowl. Oh, we got to keep the fishbowl. You don't lose the fishbowl. The fishbowl is Mysterio.
Yeah.
Without the fishbowl, there is that beautiful thing. Because, you know, before I ever bought one single copy of a Marvel comic, I was watching the 67...
Rob Bashke, absolutely, man.
Yeah. Watching those on, and by the time, those came out when I was born, so they were in syndication when I was a kid.
Me like too, man.
7, 8 years old, and I was watching those, and every time when he had Mysterio with the full fishbowl, what a great visual, what a great thing. I love the way they're playing him in the Spectacular Spider-Man cartoon. You're going to see a new take on Mysterio. I don't want to say anymore.
Okay. No, no.
I don't want to ruin anything.
No, that's, I'm like Oprah, man. Sometimes you guys say more than you should, so that's all right.
Yeah, I'm loving the Mysterio arc so far. And,
fantastic.
It's Marcos Martin. You can never go wrong with Marcos Martin. Marcos Martin is one of my favorite artists ever to work with. When I was doing Paper Doll with Marcos, I was an issue and a half into the paper doll arc before I realized I hadn't put down a single locator caption. It never dawned on me. And I went back and I started looking, like, did I use a locator caption anywhere? And I'm like, no, because he's so good. You know where and when you are at every moment in a Marco story. Every line that is there is the only line you need. It's like when you see young guys who get into comics, like with these young kids, and they look at some, like, 90s art, and they go, oh, this art looks awesome. Look at all the little scritchy, scratchy lines he did. He drawed a million scritchy, scratchy lines. That's awesome. No, the beauty is you draw the one perfect line that just gives you all the expression of the character and the mood and tells the story. An elegant simplicity is so much harder than someone going all over the place. Alex Toth used to say he spent the first half of his career learning what lines to put on the page and the second half of his career learning which ones to take away.
Yep.
And Marcos Martin is the epitome of that. You could not remove one single line, nor should you add to it. It's just the most beautiful illustration you'll see in a comic, and I'm thrilled to be working with him again.
Excellent, Matt. So a new spin on the serial coming up, and Spider-Man the List. And in the meantime, we enjoy
Adam Kubert.
With Adam Kubert, absolutely. And we'll be looking forward to more Mighty Avengers.
With Quite Fam and two issues by Sean Chen coming up.
Outstanding. And you can always expect good humor, good action, and fun continuity Easter eggs, too, when you got a Dan Slott Marvel book. So thanks, man.
Mighty Avengers 30, page 10. You're going to scan it. You're going to run all over the internet. You're going to say that's either the stupidest thing you've ever seen or the most brilliant. There's no middle ground.
Excellent, man. Well, we look forward to the debate on that page and more fun from Dan Slott. Thanks for your time, Dan, as
always. Thanks,
John.
See you.
Can I sign while we're talking?
Absolutely.
Okay.
John Sutcher's here in Artist Alley during Chicago Comic Con, and I'm here with one of my favorites, and one of the Word Balloon favorites, I'm pleased to say. We get a lot of feedback, positive feedback, when I speak to Howard Chaykin. And it's a pleasure to see him now as he is signing and doing sketches here in Artist Alley. It's a pleasure to see you.
How you doing, pal? What's going on?
The usual, man, and enjoying what we're seeing. And so happy to hear that Dominic Fortune is coming back. Way to go.
I mean, it was the funniest thing. I had not a product I ever would have promoted. Axel asked me to do it, and I said, yeah. And he was like, well, yeah, hell yeah, exactly. and it enabled me to bring up a whole bunch of material that I'd never had any opportunity to do and do a fun four-issue run with some historical stuff, some adventure stuff, some sexy stuff, some violent stuff, and just have a great, airplanes, guns, cars, and really cool clothes. What more can you ask for life?
It's the full check-in experience, which is great. That's what we're looking for.
Thank you very much for your patience. Appreciate it. I'm back to you.
Excellent. You told me it's been 22 years since you've been in Chicago.
Absolutely.
And, of course, it's crazy. And you were saying that you went to Columbia University here in Chicago. Columbia College, excuse me. But also, I think of you, of course, of your years with First Comics and American Flag. And are there any, like, Evanston or Chicago funny stories that you could quickly
think of? I can tell for a mixed audience. the problem remains that my experience living in Chicago when I was a kid was some of the most insane, wild times I've ever had. And the experience I had working with First, particularly with a bunch of guys who were no longer around, would get me arrested. So I felt it's imperative that I not share this with you in a public venue.
Fair enough.
I prefer to stay unindicted.
Recent quirky runs, and I only say quirky because I was sorry that they ended as quickly as they did, that I really enjoyed. Your association with Mark Guggenheim on Blade. What a work. It was a blast.
Mark's stuff is so good, and I said more. And every time I talk about Mark, I'm sure you're getting tired to hear about this, but Mark is the most artist-friendly writer I've ever worked with. His stuff breaks down. There's a narrative sensibility to his stuff that is so accessible to me that it was just a gas. I mean, I had no intention of doing it. Blade is not a character I care about particularly, but the premise he developed and the way he approached it was so cool that I couldn't say no. And it was an absolute great year. I had a great time.
Excellent. And I would also follow that by saying two guys that seem to be on your wavelength, even though they're younger, Matt Fraction and Rick Remender on The Punisher.
Again, an absolute guess. The funniest thing, as I said earlier to somebody else, is these guys know nothing about New York real estate and New York geography. So some of the things they asked me to draw was like, no, okay, but all right. And I had a great time with it. They're both truly hysterically funny guys. And again, there's also stuff I won't get arrested on, so we'll keep it there.
Very cool.
But a great job. Lovely. Again, it's guns, cities, and cars.
And I definitely recommend people picking up the hardcover of Dynamite's repackaging of American Flag.
Your lips to God's ear, pal.
Anything else coming up other than Don McFortune?
Nothing I can talk about because, I'm going to be doing some work for IDW. I'm going to be doing some G.I. Joe villain stuff.
Very
which
cool.
I'm really excited about.
Writing and drawing?
I'm just drawing.
Okay.
I got a call from Andy Schmidt over there, who's one of my favorite people. And he said, "You want to do this?" And I said, "Yeah, it'd be kind of cool." They're short pieces, but they're interesting character pieces. And I've read the first script; it's a hoot. And I'll be drawing that, I guess, in the next couple of weeks. But yeah, that's what I'm doing. There's a bunch of other stuff as well. That's because I respect the client's judgment and being the ones to disperse the information. I'll leave it to them.
Fair enough. When the time comes and the announcement is made, I'll be bugging you on the phone, and we'll have another wonderful conversation. Excellent, man. Always good to talk to you, man.
My pleasure, guys. Behave. Enjoy the show.
Thank you.
Thanks, man.
So there's just a hint of some of the floor interviews that I did during the Chicago Comic-Con, and you can see the videos of many of them if you go to wordballoon.com or our YouTube channel as well, youtube.com/wordballoon. I'd be looking for more video coming not only from Chicago Comic-Con, but in just a couple weeks, the Windy City Comic-Con, the one-day event on September 19th. I will be there conducting interviews and holding a few panels as well. We'll give you details of that on the next episode of Word Balloon, but in the meantime, make sure you check out their website, WindyCityComicCon.com. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. Thanks for listening. This is John Suntress reminding you to come to WordBalloon.com. You can also contact me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Make sure you follow me on Twitter, John Word Balloon, or at Facebook under my name, John Suntress. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2009.